is like three times we've been able to play the milkshake song here on the Kellis. What is it?
Kellis.
All right. Almost like Khaleesi, but not.
Right.
Kellis.
And it never gets old. Ever since it came out, what, in 04, 05? I love the song.
There you go. So the milkshakes. I wonder if you can go. Can you see trends on iTunes? See what, like, you know how they'll say, after whatever happens, there'll be a celebrity musician will pass away, and they'll say, look at the iTunes stats for sales of their songs go up. I wonder if sales of Milkshake by Kellis have increased since the milkshaking, the milkshooked politicians, which we pointed out, first stateside milkshaking that I know of was Representative Matt Gaetz in Northwest Florida. We'll find out what our buddy Jeff Poor from WVNN at the Jeff Poor Show, and of course Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News, what he has to say. Have you scored this? Do you know if that Matt Gaetz milkshaking was the first stateside milkshaking?
I do think it is his first stateside milkshaking, yeah. Carried over from a long tradition of European milkshaking, as you well know.
Sweet. We're always corrupted. We're just taking stuff from Europe. We're appropriating. Yeah, that's it. That's milkshake appropriation, doing it here stateside. I did say that, you know, from the video yesterday with Based Amy, you know, popping the baby Trump blimp balloon and the milkshakes being thrown, you know, that if this is the extent of the political discourse, yes, it is the silly season, but it could be worse. It's, I mean, you know, as acts of political unrest are throwing milkshakes and popping balloons, it could be worse.
It's just a free exercise of the First Amendment there, guys. You know, it just shows up in different ways.
Yeah, this is just a delicious way to do it.
But don't you think, I mean, right now, when you just say milkshakes and stabbing balloons, it doesn't sound bad, but if you look at some of the videos, there's some angry people out there in London, and, I mean, they're not even Americans. They're upset that the president's visiting over there.
Those people are going to be angry no matter what. They're going to be angry if there's... but you know what I'm saying? They are looking for a reason to be angry. And that's kind of the protest culture we live in. Look, they can do what they want to do. Like I said, we have a First Amendment. But I don't think those people are ever going to go away no matter who's president, because they were always around when Obama was president. They were always angry when Obama was president. So you could have these left-wing socialist folks, but they're just, it's just anger looking for a reason to be angry.
Sport anger. So what about that? President, at his time meeting with both the monarchy and legitimate government as well in the United Kingdom. It seems like a very warm reception on both sides.
Yeah, and, you know, they're going through a transitional phase here with the government over in the United Kingdom. I do think there's a lot of things going on with trade right now, and, you know, even the EU with some of the, you know, some of our commodities and metals, right? So, I don't think you can get a whole lot policy-wise out of this, but it's still going over there in Buckingham Palace in the pomp and circumstance. But I will say this, all those protests, I just don't think that they represent the view over there. I think that is a very select sample. I think those are people that are, like I said, protesting everything, and the news media are going to run with it because it's people protesting Trump.
You're right. I mean, because that's kind of the question you want to ask is, you know, why should we care what somebody in England, somebody protesting in London thinks about the president? It's like when people who are not constituents of a member of Congress are screaming bloody murder at them, and they're like, why aren't they paying attention to me? I want to go, because you don't vote for them. You're not their audience.
Right. Well, it's not even that so much as, you know, the narrative or the message they want to send, the media that is remember Barack Obama and the Brandenburg Gates and how he was just loved and adored. And that's a big thing for the left. Remember how we're viewed in the world, how we're loved around the world. Like, it's very important to consider what people think of us internationally. And I think they think that this has some kind of wheels to it, that if we're not loved internationally, then that is a stain on Donald Trump, and therefore he's a bad president.
All right, so let's talk about what's going on back here stateside as the president is there and will be there for the commemoration of 75 years since D-Day. Back home, this Mexican tariff talk has some people inside the GOP pushing back. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm not surprised on that. I mean, when I saw this coming, I figured maybe they come at these ideas through their own heart as members of the House and Senate, or maybe it's the fact that the big donors out there, big players in international business, are saying, okay, this is enough. You can't do this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the country club establishment Republicans are not on board with this at all. They are, but here's the problem. I don't think they have the wherewithal to do something legislatively against the President of the United States. They don't have the numbers either side in the House or the Senate to override a presidential veto if they tried to pass something. And it's just kind of a product of the Congress's inaction not to do anything about immigration or do anything about border security to this point. Now, how this works for Trump politically, that I think is the question that remains to be seen, but I don't think it's very universal in that there are some Republicans, and there are some very powerful Republicans, John Thune, Mitch McConnell, that are against this, but I don't know that there's much they can do other than say, hey, we're not going to back you if you are up for impeachment or something, but even then, it's a heavy lift.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you think it's that they would go to the mattresses like that and go that far out that, you know, they wouldn't defend him on a impeachment? And y'all can pay attention why this is important, because they can do whatever they want in the House controlled by the Democrats and bring impeachment. But we know that it's not going to be judged impeachable by the Senate. So this is a big deal. Or would it be, hey, we're going to stand with you on this stuff, but, you know, you needed our help on this other policy or that. I think there's got to be some weight brought to bear here, because I think maybe they themselves truly believe that this shouldn't happen, this tariff against Mexico. But I know, I got to feel that there are some, like you said, some big players out there saying, you know what, we donate to y'all, we back you, Thune, McConnell, do not let this happen.
Right, I agree with that. On the impeachment question, the one thing that I think could happen is the House will do it, and then immediately I think Mitch McConnell could move to acquit, which is, you know, not a highest threshold as the whole proceedings, and then the whole impeachment question's over with. But you know, if Donald Trump's not playing ball, well, maybe we'll go through the process, and we'll have hearings. You know, I think Mitch McConnell has a lot more tools at his disposal that he can hold over the president's head, but I don't think it's anything that's significant that could, you know, get him. I don't think there's anything that could get him to, if he didn't play ball with Mitch McConnell, that there's a, you know, other than anything Congress is going to do right now, it doesn't really matter. It's because the House is controlled by the Democrats, so it's right. Not like we're going to get some kind of big policy move. So you got to look at these other means Mitch McConnell has to hold over Trump. The others are some of his confirmations. You know, he has Ken Cuccinelli, who's up for a post. And that could, Mitch McConnell could slow those down and use those as leverage. But you just, there are things. There is horse trading that could be done over this tariff if Mitch McConnell so chooses to make it an issue.
Oh, we can come back. I figured Mitch McConnell would be too busy getting everything together to interfere in Senate 2020 elections in Alabama. No? A little extra time? All right, coming right back with Jeff Poor. Jeff Poor Show, WVNN, 2 to 5, weekday afternoons. And, of course, he's writing in Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News, and a big fan of milkshakes, I guess. So. It's better than yours, I could teach you, but I have to charge. Who wants you get involved? Everyone. All right, 822 FM Talk 106.5. And it is Mobile Mornings. By the way, we've got the confirmation that happened just about 10 minutes ago. that video that I posted to my Twitter feed and it's on our Facebook page of that great white swimming in on the scuba divers over the weekend. These guys were out during the Floribama tournament that was Friday and Saturday, and they're in the spearfishing division, and they were out shooting snapper and grouper out on a wreck out south of Perdita Pass. And you know, this shark swims in, happens to be a great white shark, and they got the video. David Murphy, one of those divers, the guy who took the video, is going to join us today at noon for Midday Mobile, talk about what to me was scariest video I've seen in a while from out the Gulf. So y'all check out the video and listen to him coming up today at noon. We continue our conversation with our buddy Jeff Poor from WVNN's Jeff Poor Show. Oddly enough, perfect show for him. And also doing his work in Yellowhammer News and Breitbart and Lanyap. All right, let's look back here to Alabama and what's next now. Session is over. Regular session is over. If you scored it, you'd give it a what?
Probably about a 7. I think in the court of public opinion, it's probably much lower because you didn't get the lottery. But a lot of big things happened this year. Obviously, the gas tax. I think that abortion ban, even if it gets struck down by the courts, that's still a big thing. It took a lot of work to get done. You don't usually, you know, move the ball like that. And typically, now this was the first year of a new quadrennium, so that's when big things like that happen. But I think, you know, some other things that happen. You did it without as much. There were some tense moments, as we know. We could talk about John Rogers and what happened in the Senate with the abortion ban. But for the stuff that the legislature does traditionally, there really wasn't that much rancor. There really wasn't that much disagreement.
All right, it's like you already knew my next question because you mentioned John Rogers. So it gets me thinking about Senate 2020. What did he say? He had to raise $1 million, and if he did, he would oppose Senator Jones in the Democratic primary?
That'll be very difficult, but yeah, it was something like that. And he had a threshold he had to meet. Like I said, I don't think he gets on the ballot. Do we think that anybody's going to legitimately challenge Doug Jones on the Democratic side? I don't. And now when you talk to some of the Doug Jones folks, they're worried about that. They're more worried about what Nancy Worley and that crew will do because Doug Jones was so, you know, against the Democratic Alabama Democratic Party in the status quo.
Okay. Then on the GOP primary side, so what is it? So last week we were talking about the Donald Trump Jr. and the president and a Twitter beef with Roy Moore's people over whether he was going to get in for Senate 2020 or not. You're one of the best connected in the state. What are you hearing? Is he going to get in?
Yeah, we had Roy Moore on the show Friday, and he kind of given the same line. I think he has to get in, but is it a serious run like it was in 2017, or is it just one of these get out the run just so I could raise money kind of runs like he did against Bob Riley in 06, and what he did in 2010 when he ran for governor in that crowded field, if you remember, once again with Bradley Byrne in the field, but Robert Bentley and Tim James as well. That remains to be seen. I think what I tell people is things are going to be a little bit different because you'll have two name ID guys. And when I say two name ID guys, if Roy Moore gets in, you'll have a Roy Moore and you have Tommy Tuberville. And people, the casual, I'm going to go vote and do my civic duty, but I'm not really going to do my homework on the candidates. And then when I get to the ballot box, I'm going to look and say, hey, I've heard of this guy. Let me check this box. That is, I think with Tuberville and Roy Moore on the ballot, I think that splits that vote.
Yeah, I think there's a contingent Alabama voters that's absolutely true. I am interested, and you and I, you know, have taken different opinions here on who has the bigger name ID. I think they're both, I think it's like a horse race. I think it's a close horse race between the two. You seem to think Tuberville has the better name recognition than Roy Moore.
Yeah, I do, and I think the thing I've noticed kind of in the early days of the Tuberville campaign, you bring a different kind of interest to the race. You bring a different kind of voter. Our brethren on the sports talk side of radio, Tommy Tuberville's been on every one of those shows, and they may ask him about the NCAA transfer portal or the West Coast offense, but he is getting out and about, and there is a set of people. I don't know what that number is, but it is a number that think a football coach would be great for Alabama. And I just think that works in Tuberville's favor to some degree, whereas Roy Moore, he may come on our shows. He may even go on some of these religious-based stations, if you know what I mean, and get out there and have that community cornered. But he's always had that. That's always been in his back pocket. This is a whole new, I think, a whole new dynamic, a whole new element perhaps introduced to the electorate.
If Roy Moore does announce his campaign and starts running, how do you think he's going to approach this whole Trump situation with Trump Jr. and the president saying that he should not run? Do you think he's going to maybe say, and not many could say this, but say he's even further right than President Trump, and that Trump is kind of kowtowing to people out there, and Roy Moore is even Trumpier than Trump? Do you think he'd go that route?
I mean, I asked him about this Friday, and he just the answer he gave me was, I don't know why the president's turned against me. Now, in an interview with the, I believe, with the Associated Press, if I'm not mistaken, he said, well, Donald Trump doesn't get to pick who represents Alabama. I'll remind folks, Donald Trump backed Luther Strange in 2017. Guess who didn't win in 2017? So,
right.
Not sure how much this matters. This isn't the first time Donald Trump has opposed to Roy Moore, and it didn't work out that time for Donald Trump.
All right. Others in the mix, we talk about AL1 Congressman Bradley Byrne. It seems like he is talking about being on shows. Every time I turn around, he's on a show somewhere, which he should, outside of AL1. He's in other parts of the state getting that name recognition.
What I think going on here is really, really smart for Bradley Byrne. Now, he's got some headwinds. And so when you get a chance, folks, take a look at the map of Alabama when it was Robert Bentley versus Bradley Byrne, and compare the areas that Bentley did real well and Byrne did real well. The places Byrne did real well, there aren't that many, but they were the Shelby County, Southwest Alabama, Jefferson County, those places like that. Everywhere else, Robert Bentley. What is Bradley Byrne doing that's different this time? He's in the Shoals this weekend on Saturday. I followed him around a little bit with him and his entourage, and it occurs to me that he didn't do that well in 2010 up in the Shoals. He didn't do that well in Lauderdale or Colbert counties. He's courting local politicians, trying to get their endorsements, and he's trying to, trying to spend some more time in different parts of the state. Another place in the state where he didn't do that well in 2010, Geneva County. If you don't know where Geneva County is, it's down next to Dothan, right on
Samson,
the Florida line.
Samson, Alabama.
Yes, exactly. And he's down there trying to get local politicians to endorse him. What happened yesterday is really important. He got Opelika Mayor Gary Fuller to give him an endorsement. In that part of the world, in politics, Lee County, you know,
that's big.
They think everything is just sort of revolves around Auburn. It does a sub degree, but as far as, like, I would say, he's not even up and comer. He is a very, very liked politician, even with all his problems with the local internet and stuff there. He is a very liked, because Opelika is doing really well economically. He got that endorsement. So watch these endorsements that Bradley Byrne gets around the state. He's trying to piece together a network and build a statewide network. And that's what he's doing. It's so much different than any other time he's ran. Now, will it be enough? That's a question. But I do think it's a much better start than what he had gotten in 2010.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Sean.
837 FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings on a Wednesday. And it's time to head to McConnell Automotive, where we talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I am doing great. And just got off McConnellAutomotive.com, where I was checking out what you got in inventory. Tell everybody out there why McConnellAutomotive.com is such a great place to start when you're looking for a vehicle.
Well, Dalton, that's a great question, buddy. I love you asking that, because we think that the main thing about our website that everybody will love is if you actually pick a vehicle out, you will get that price if you call us or come see us or email us. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but if you're listening out there, you've probably been frustrated shopping at another car dealership in the last few years because you really thought you had a great deal. You went in the dealership and, man, you went in there and they told you something different than what you saw online. And, Dalton, that's what we've been doing since 1955, is just trying to be a little notch above and very transparent. And one of my favorite deals, Dalton, on our website right now is Yukons and Denalis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great vehicle. Everybody knows what they are. But you literally just pick your vehicle out, and you get 10% off the sticker price. You don't have to haggle, no negotiating, and we're adding some things to that and giving even more value for trade-ins, lower payments, things that people love. And man, I appreciate what you told me, what you said on the air there about our website. I think it's the best one around. So hopefully people will shop whether they want a Sierra, a Yukon, a Acadia, any kind of Buick. And I do think we have the best prices on the Gulf Coast, buddy. So thanks for mentioning that, and I hope everybody has a great day.
Hey, no problem. Some good stuff there. We appreciate it, Mitch.
Thanks, Dalton. Take care, buddy.
That's Mitch McConnell. You'll find McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
Right. Grab some calls and text at 343-0106. Also, one of our three big things, top stories of the day. Number two on this has me... I'd love to get reaction here from folks in law enforcement, folks that have served in the military as well, with the arrest yesterday of that Florida deputy who knew the gunman was loose at Parkland High School but refused to go inside and confront the assailant. Arrested yesterday, Scott Peterson, on 11 criminal charges related to his inaction during the massacre that killed 17. Remember, he was the on-duty resource officer at Marjory Stone and Douglas High School on February 14th of 2018, but never entered the building while bullets were flying. He was charged with child neglect, culpable negligence, and perjury, allegations that carry a maximum prison sentence of nearly 100 years. Peterson was seen on surveillance video rushing with two staff members towards the building where the shooting happened. When they arrived, he pulled his weapon and went forward, but then retreated and took up a position outside where he stood with his gun drawn. And that was actually one of the eyewitness reports of the survivors said she could see out the window him there with the gun drawn.
Oh, but man.
Standing outside, not coming in. The charges follow a 14-month investigation by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, which conducted interviews with 184 witnesses, reviewed hours of surveillance videos, and compiled 212 investigative reports. Peterson said he did, Scott Peterson did absolutely nothing to mitigate the shooting, said FDLE Commissioner Rick Swearingen in a statement. There can be no excuse for his complete inaction and no question that his inaction cost lives, end quote. Lori Aldehaf, whose 14-year-old daughter Alyssa was killed, said she was surprised to hear of Peterson's arrest. She recalled sending a text to her daughter when she heard there was a shooting. I told her to hide, that help was on the way. Well, Peterson was that help, but he froze, and he failed us that day, Aldehaf said. Went on to say he was supposed to be the good guy with the gun who was supposed to go in and meet the threat, and he let us all down, end quote. Tony Montalato, whose daughter Gina Montalato, 14, died in the attack, said families wanted justice to be done. He said, we're happy to see some accountability for this tragedy. And he is the president of Stand With Parkland Victim Family Group. Now, this is interesting because I don't know that I've heard of a story like this in the past. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Have y'all ever heard a situation where a member of law enforcement or security didn't do their job because... Thank goodness 99.9% of the time we're talking about the heroics of these men and women who step in, you know, and in this case, and also, so there's more, that's the story, but I've heard more since then. This Scott Peterson was saying that he only heard like three or four shots or something like that, didn't hear the others, and that's one of the things they said he perjured himself on because somebody else was there with him and said they heard more shots or something to that effect. He stands there and doesn't go in. And then some of that testimony from students, this one young lady in the testimony said she was looking out the window. Think about this. So Dirtbag is going through that school, shooting, and she's looking out the window, and there's help. Mm-hmm. There's law enforcement. There's the hero, you know, with the gun. And they're standing there, gun drawn, not coming in. That makes a hair stand up on the back of my neck. I mean, it makes me feel sick.
Yeah, I remember the day after that attack. It might have even been that day. I don't remember when the video first came out that showed Scott Peterson. Remember there was a golf cart, and they were driving around the campus, and I think he got off the golf cart at one point, and you could see him outside of one of the buildings, and you could really tell that he was caught. He didn't know whether he should run in or stay safe, and that's when he started getting blasted by everyone in the public that had finally watched the video. I didn't realize
he had training. So I mean, this is not in that story, but I know that he had a ton of active shooter training. They said about him, and he didn't
And I didn't realize that there was an ongoing investigation. So they've been looking at this for 14 months. And I didn't realize what they would be able to charge him with for this.
Like, I've never seen something like this before. I don't know that I disagree with them charging him. I don't remember a story where somebody in that position had been charged in the past.
Even though we all agree that he should have done something, do you feel kind of like this might be Broward County's Sheriff's Office throwing someone? I mean, this someone was already under the bus, but kind mm-hmm. of keeping them under the bus. Because remember, there were stories that came out after that about the kid who committed the shooting, and that there had been worries about that kid for a while, mm-hmm. and that even the sheriff there in Broward County had been told about what was going on, and that you know, there were some issues around the sheriff's office about whether they did everything they could have to help limit this. But it seems like maybe they're using this and using America's anger at Scott Peterson to kind of make him culpable for the entire thing.
Right. I mean, here you have somebody who was not the shooter, but being arrested, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's so different. But I would say that part of this, too, there's politics in it. I was reading some on this from WSVN TV station down in Miami, and they got into more details because that audience down there knows the premise here. So Broward County, so you have Dade County to the south of Broward County. This Miami is Dade County. Fort Lauderdale is Broward County. So up in Broward County, where Parkland High School is, the sheriff was replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they're saying this is since that shooting, and they're saying there's some politics around this, as like the new sheriff comes in and is taking out maybe a political vendetta through this arrest of Scott Peterson. But I would turn around and say the questions asked and in the investigation, I don't know that I disagree with this. I don't know what you arrest him on, but he didn't do his job.
No.
I mean, maybe there's something we didn't see. Like everything, I go, you know, if you weren't there, you don't know. Did he really hear the shots? I got to figure he heard the shots. If he knew the shooting was going on in that building and he didn't go in, then he failed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's something that he couldn't tell what building or something. I'm trying, but this investigation, fairly exhaustive, at least according to the report, they come back with that they charge him.
Right. I can't think, I'm just like you, I can't think of anything similar to this ever happening before. And I imagine once this goes to trial, it'll have to make it to trial with them charging him, unless he pleads guilty, which I can't imagine that he would do to some of these charges. But this will be a case that's looked at down the road in the history of these things, because I've never heard of anything like this happening before. But just imagine, I know that we all know and think that this guy should have done more than he did, but he's not, that doesn't necessarily make him a bad person to the core. I mean, it's a bad thing
he's
that
not
he did.
He's not the perpetrator. You're right. I mean, he is not the perpetrator of the shooting.
He should have done more, and he should certainly answer to whatever crimes they can charge him with, that for, whether it was lying or doing his job. He should have been in there trying to help save people, but he's not the evil person that this shooter was, and I can't imagine the hell that he's been living through since this happened. That just to know that he should have gone in there and done something, he has to be living in a personal hell.
A comment here from Fred Gutenberg, whose daughter Jamie was killed in the shooting. His quote, "I have no comment except to say rot in hell, Scott Peterson. You could have saved some of the 17. You could have saved my daughter. You did not, and then you lied about it, and you deserve the misery coming your way." So there's the opinion coming from many of the family members who lost loved ones in that shooting. We'll grab some calls on this when we get back in text at 343-0106. Right, 850 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Segment of the show brought to you by Lightstream. Looking for a way to save some extra money this summer? Why not start by paying less interest on your credit card balances when you refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream? It's an easy way to save hundreds, thousands of bucks. Lower your interest rate. Think about this right now. Lightstream offering credit card consolidation loans from 5.95% APR with AutoPay, lower than the average credit card interest rate that's over 19% APR. Absolutely no fees, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. LightStream believes people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. So y'all can get this deal now and apply for a special interest rate discount. The only way to get that discount, though, is to go to lightstream.com/Sullivan, my last name. The website, lightstream.com/Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V as in Victor, A-N. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Sullivan for more information. Dalton, you're reading through a couple of the texts coming in here, and we'll get to the phones as well.
Yeah, we've had a couple people on both sides of this discussion. Keith says, as someone who served over 20 years in law enforcement, some of that time in Broward County, I was completely outraged by Deputy Peterson's inaction. His conscious decision to do nothing other than hide behind a pole and yell into his radio was disgraceful. School staff members who were unarmed and not trained, and any type of police tactics did more than he did. So he's saying more staff members did more than the deputy who was there supposed to keep the kids safe. Then you have someone who says, families of people who commit suicide never believe that their loved ones took their own lives, and families of overdose victims are always looking to charge someone else for their death of their loved ones. You know, that kind of happens whenever some traumatic event happens like this. You always want to find someone to blame. I mean, it's just human nature. They said, here again, the families of the deceased are looking to charge anyone they can. It's unfortunate for the officer. I'm not 100% taking up for him, but I think he'll beat this. Ask yourself, would you run towards an active shooter?
Well, okay. The question would be, if you took that job, that's why we hold folks in law enforcement and the military in such high esteem, because their job is to run towards the gunfire. Right? I mean, regular folks' natural inclination is to run away from gunfire, right? I mean, but in this case, it is, if you are in law enforcement, if you are in public safety, you're in the military, your job is to run towards the gunfire.
That's your job, and that's exactly what you're supposed to do, and you should be held accountable if you don't do that. But think about how many people out there, I mean, if you're playing the odds, what are the odds that your school that you happen to be working as a deputy, what are the odds that there will be an active shooter situation there? I mean, I know you plan for it.
Right.
And just
they're
in
very
case,
low. In reality, they're very low.
Yeah, I'm sure in his mind, he never, ever, ever thought this day would come, and it's clear that he was not cut out for the job, and he should be held accountable for that. But when the public...
He'd been a deputy a long time. I think he had a... Well, in this case, he was a school resource officer, but he had been a Broward County deputy for decades,
and,
I believe.
And he was certainly more trained, or at least more prepared there at the moment than anyone on those school grounds until the rest of the police force showed up. But, you know, when the public trains their bullseye on somebody, it's all or nothing. And whoever the public gets angry at, they become the worst person in the world at that moment. And I've been saying since the shooting that, yeah, this guy should be held accountable, but we can't put him on the same plane as that school shooter.
No, you're right, and I think that's being, and you're right, because I can see both sides. I'm not bothered that they're going to go after him. I mean, he was fired, or I think he actually resigned before they fired him, but that part and some admonishment and some charges for not doing your job, I think, in my opinion, those are warranted because he didn't do his job. At the same time, he is not the shooter, okay? Mm-hmm. So that, and you're right, in the social media court of public opinion, he almost gets put in the same category as the shooter, and it isn't the same, but it still doesn't make it right. Let's go to the phones. John is in Mobile, up first.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Remember the Governor DeSantis removed that sheriff, Israel.
Right, and they've replaced.
He was part of the lie that this guy, and by the way, Scott Peterson is kind of a bad man, because this is the second one.
Yeah, that's right.
The second Scott Peterson's got in trouble.
You're right. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That guy went in California or something.
Yeah, the guy that killed his friend's wife.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to talk about on the D-Day celebration or memorial, whatever you want to call it, you need to read or listen to Trump read parts of FDR's prayer, because you can very easily, as he prayed against Germany, me as a believer, I pray that against Islam. I don't want to be that guy, but I'll be that guy, because we are fighting with Islam for our freedom, our religion, and our way of life.
Okay, well, I'll go back and listen to it. I didn't hear it the same way, but we can... it's interesting take. I hadn't thought about that way. Tim Satsuma, up next.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Just listening to your conversation, and I'm not agreeing or disagreeing, but just throwing my two cents in. The sheriff guy there, I mean, did they review this already? Did he go through protocol as far as taking cover, not knowing how many shooters there were? I mean, what if he would have been taking cover in the correct spot when the guy came out of the room and shot the guy? You know, I mean, you know, I'm not taking up for him, but he didn't know where the guy was, how many, or, you know, I don't know if he's a coward, and I don't know if you can charge him for being a coward when it came to that, or whether he was just trying to be, you know, in the right spot or take cover and get in the correct position. What do you guys think about that as far as, I mean, have they actually done a case thing where they said, no, you should have been, you know, two buildings closer, or was he, you know, like, you know, one building too far away when he took cover, or I don't know the details.
Well, I guess with them,
know more about it.
Well, yeah, I guess with them, I appreciate the call. With them charging him, they believe that he's failed in what he's supposed to do. But on top of that, and I'm not claiming to be an expert here at all, but I think if I'm remembering correctly, conversations I've had with experts in this, folks from law enforcement have been on the show with me. I think the protocol now, post-Columbine, is to neutralize immediately, to not wait, because waiting was shown to be not an effective tactic, to like take up positions and stuff. I do not think that's protocol. And somebody I know, enough folks in law enforcement, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the protocol is to go to the source immediately with using tactical movement, but to go to the source and neutralize that source right away. Do not take up positions. Go to the shooter.
That sounds right. And, you know, this was a 14-month investigation. I mean, this happened in February of 2018, so they've been investigating this since then. And what's rare, and it's like this, there's actually a lot of video evidence, because that week we were watching video of this deputy outside of the school, and if you remember, he did draw his gun, but he was outside of the, I think he was outside of the building where the shots were taking place, but he was kind of all by himself, and he had that look like the high dive, you're about to jump off the high dive, like he knew he should leap into action, but he just stayed right there. And with all these different witnesses they've interviewed and that video they've watched, they've determined that he did not do his job.
All right, there you go. We'll take more of your text over at 343-0106. Coming up at noon today, go check out the video of the great white that comes swimming in off the coast of Baldwin County over the weekend. And watch that video, and we'll talk to that diver that shot the video coming up at noon today. Y'all stay close.